You can listen to the scientists and they will tell you that the climate is changing. But all you have to do is believe what we're seeing and feeling. And the American people are so resilient. And I think not only will we overcome and begin to mitigate climate change, but I think we'll thrive with new jobs, new technologies, new business models. I think the will of the people will win the day.
I'm your host, Adam Met, and today we're talking to EPA Administrator Michael Regan. Michael Regan is the 16th administrator of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the first Black man to hold the position. He began his career in the EPA 20 years ago, eventually moving on to work with the Environmental Defense Fund. In 2017, he became the Cabinet Secretary of North Carolina's Department of Environmental Quality, where he spearheaded the movement towards a clean energy economy, led cleanups of legacy pollutants, and established North Carolina's first Environmental Justice and Equity Board. As EPA administrator under President Biden, Regan has emphasized environmental justice, not only putting equity at the forefront of our current initiatives, but also amending previous injustices and setting a precedent for equality in future actions. We talk about working with corporations to reach climate goals, engaging with indigenous communities, and creating green jobs for a green future. A quick reminder that we're planting a tree for every person who subscribes to this podcast, so make sure to hit that subscribe button. And without further ado, here is Michael Regan on Planet Reimagined. So, Administrator, the Environmental Protection Agency, first of all, what is the EPA?
The EPA is the foremost agency that protects public health and our environment. We are an agency that has 10 regional offices, and we really focus on both regulations and voluntary actions to protect air quality, the air we breathe, and water quality, the water that we drink. We also focus on cleaning up legacy pollutants that have polluted our lands. And this administration is laser focused on environmental justice, justice and equity for all people and all communities.
Amazing. So we're going to talk a little bit more about environmental justice in a bit, but how does the EPA work as a collaborator within the administration across all of the other pieces of the work that the Biden administration is working on now?
Well, you know, I think we play a very central role in the president's agenda for racial equity and inclusion and environmental protection. We are charged with leading this administration in cleaning up pollution and combating climate change. And so we have a lot of regulatory power to partner with the public sector to ensure that we're reducing emissions, both emissions that contribute to climate change and global warming, but reducing pollution that impacts communities on all levels. Again, pollution that impacts the air that we breathe and the water that we drink. And so we have a central role, and we're really proud of that role in this administration.
And what about you? How did you become an advocate for the environment and for justice?
Well, you know, I grew up hunting and fishing with my father and grandfather, enjoyed being outside, outdoors, and really partaking in our natural resources. But there were times growing up where I had respiratory illnesses that were exacerbated by pollution and allergens. And so from a very early age, I recognized that there was a direct correlation between pollution and the inability to enjoy the things that we love so much. So that was how I got my start. Obviously, I pursued a degree in environmental science, and my first job was actually with the EPA.
Wow. So how do you see policy as an effective tool for environmental protection, as fitting in alongside corporations and nonprofits?
It's critical. Policy and regulations are critical because they're meant to serve as rules for the road. Overwhelmingly, most companies and most people want to do right by the environment and their fellow citizen. And so it's really about establishing policies and rules of engagement so that we can all meet one another's expectations. There's a critical role for this agency to partner with the private sector where there's lots of innovation and entrepreneurship. This notion that you can't protect the environment and create jobs simultaneously is false. Mm-hmm. We can do both. And that's what we're promoting here at EPA.
Can you talk about some of those partnerships between EPA and the private sector that you are the most excited about?
Well, you know, I'm really excited about a lot of our partnerships. Just recently, I was out in California spending time with a former administrator, Lisa Jackson, who works at Apple. And we talked about how we can work together to invest in underinvested communities and tackle environmental justice. But we also talked about Apple's role in reducing its own carbon footprint, but also reducing the carbon footprint in their supply chain. There is such power in the corporate sector to really tackle carbon and methane and other climate pollutants. And so I enjoy those engagements, but I'm also proud. The Energy Star label that you see on all of your appliances, well, that's a product of EPA.
Wow.
The Energy Star program was created by the Environmental Protection Agency, and we're excited about what we've done to mainstream energy efficiency and climate reducing tactics.
That's fantastic. So, can you talk a little bit more about environmental justice and why it is so important as a piece of the EPA?
You know, it's critical. For far too long, our Black and Brown and Indigenous communities have borne disproportionately levels of pollution. Strategically, facilities were located in communities that did not have the political power or the economic or financial standing to fight back. Those communities now have higher rates of asthma and heart and lung disease. And so it's the job of this agency to protect every single person, every single community. And we believe that if we protect the most vulnerable amongst us, it will serve as a rising tide for protecting all people. And so we want to get it right. We want to address the past transgressions that have occurred. But moving forward, as we think about reducing climate pollution and air pollution and water pollution, we want to do it in a just and fair and equitable way. No matter the color of your skin or your zip code, everyone deserves equal protection from pollution. And that's what we aim to do.
Can you talk about some of the projects a little more specifically in the environmental justice space? I know you are working on projects having to do with water infrastructure, with air quality monitoring, with land revitalization and sustainability. You have partnerships with the UN. Can you talk a little bit more specifically about some of these projects?
Absolutely. You know, I think the most exciting thing about the president leading on environmental justice is he's holding all of us accountable, and it makes this job easier and more exciting. I've decided that I want to have a stronger partnership than my predecessors had with our governors, our mayors, and our locally elected officials. The reason being is a lot of these projects are green-lighted at the local level. And we need to do a better job of making sure that when a new project comes online, that a mayor or governor is just as informed as we are about the potential for the disproportionate impacts. I recently partnered with the mayor of Chicago. There was a car shredding facility that was being moved from the north side of Chicago to the southeast side of Chicago. And we can all guess why. In the southeast side of Chicago, lower income, minority community, less political clout. And so the mayor and I decided to put a pause on that permit and do a closer analysis as to whether or not this facility should be in this community. I've partnered also with other mayors across the country. Right now, I'm working with Mayor Sylvester Turner in Houston to look at a place called Kashmir Gardens, which has had lots of legacy pollution in this community. And we're seeing really exorbitant amounts of cases of cancer, especially among children. And so I'm excited to say that I am getting out from behind the desk here in Washington, D.C., partnering directly with mayors, local economic developers, the corporate sector, to really raise the bar on what we should be doing to protect every single person, no matter his or her societal standing.
So one of these communities that you mentioned before that is very near and dear to my heart and a lot of my academic work are Indigenous communities. And they, for many generations, have been leaders in the environmental movement. And my dissertation focuses on how do we take renewable energy projects and bring them to Indigenous communities as ways to create economic development, but also to expand our renewable energy projects. And I know that you are working with Indigenous communities as well. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I'm excited to co-chair a subcommittee on the White House Council for Native American Affairs. I've been partnering with Secretary Halan on really refocusing our government-to-government engagement with our tribal partners. Recently, I was out in Arizona visiting the Navajo Nation, and we were thinking about exactly what you're talking about. How do we think about the future and their role in helping us to reduce these climate pollutants? But also, how do we really tackle some legacy issues? The Navajo Nation has been dealing with abandoned uranium mines since World War II. The government went in, developed a pact with the tribal government to mine uranium so that we could have that availability for weapons to defend this country. When the war was over, we walked away from our obligation. There were over 500 abandoned uranium mines in Navajo Nation right now, disproportionately impacting and exposing the Navajo tribe to radiation and other harmful attributes. And so I'm really excited that President Biden has said, we're going to restart these conversations. We're going to have government-to-government engagement. And not only are we going to clean up past transgressions, but we're going to engage with our tribal communities to think about how they are part of the future. It's a really exciting time, but it's also long overdue, as you know.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I want to ask you about technology, because there is so much talk right now about putting money into R&D and inventing new technologies around mitigation, around carbon sequestration, around resilience. But a carbon sequestration plant came online, and that's fantastic, but it's only going to pull out about 3 seconds worth of carbon emission each year. Where are we in technologies surrounding climate change? And is that something we should be relying on? Or do we already have the solutions that we need to combat the climate crisis?
That's an excellent question. And I liken it to the iPhone platform. I think when the iPhone was created, no one could imagine how many apps would be available to leverage that platform. I believe, and the president believes, that we need to invest in a very strong, smart grid to help transmit and facilitate energy. And then lots of opportunities will avail themselves. Right now, I think we can make some bets that we need to bring more renewables on board. We really need to invest in battery storage. We need to invest in a modernized grid. But when we start to make these core investments, innovation, entrepreneurship, lots of things will take hold. And by the way, when we think about opportunities like carbon capture and sequestration, the first generation may not be the solution. But if we invest and begin to really take a look at where the potential is, the second, third, fourth generation opportunities will cost less and be more effective. So I believe it's important for this country, this great nation, to continue to be innovative, entrepreneurial, and quite frankly, children that are my son's age, Matthew, who's 7 in the second grade, won't recognize the technologies that we're talking about today because technology will be so advanced in the future.
I promise I will ask you a more positive question next, but what are you most worried about right now for our future?
I am most worried that our politics aren't keeping pace with the expectations of the people in this country and around the world. Overwhelmingly, as I travel the country, people agree with the level of investments and the direction of President Biden's Build Back Better agenda. There's no question that you can listen to the scientists, you can listen to the economists, you can listen to the national security advisors, and they will tell you that the climate is changing. But You don't even have to do that. All you have to do is believe what we're seeing and feeling. Wildfires, floods, hurricanes. And so what worries me is the conversation inside the Washington Beltway may be ignoring the realities and the will of what's happening on the ground. But saying that, notwithstanding that, I am very optimistic that if there's anybody that knows how to engage Congress and push things through, it's President Biden. He knows that institution better than anyone. And the American people are so resilient. I think we'll see breakthroughs. And I think not only will we overcome and begin to mitigate climate change, but I think we'll thrive with new jobs, new technologies, new business models. I think the will of the people will win the day.
One of the things that I'm most optimistic about is this idea of green jobs. And the thing that people don't realize about green jobs is that jobs that are already out there that you already have the skills for can be translated into green jobs. You don't need to go back to school. You don't need to relearn things. And I'm really optimistic about that. I'm curious, and I know you spoke a little bit about it. What are you excited about for the future?
The job aspect is hugely exciting. And some people can't quite grasp the difference between a regular job and a green job. And I'm glad we're starting to have that debate, because if you're a contractor, if you're an electrician, if you have basic certifications, you can really participate in this new, clean, green economy. And to your point, you don't have to have a college degree. You can have a two-year degree. You can have certifications. There are lots of transferable skills. So I'm really excited that as I travel the country, I'm starting to see regular, everyday people apply their existing skill set to our new green, clean economy. It shows that we can be economically competitive, globally competitive, and do the right thing by people and by the planet.
So for everybody who's listening to this podcast, what's the best thing that they can do to get involved aside from voting? Because in every episode, we talk about how really getting out and voting and doing your research on who you're voting for is one of the best things you can do for climate. So aside from that, what is the best way for people to get involved?
I think the best way for people to get involved is through the market. And what I mean by that is everyone's a consumer. Just take a little bit of time to see who's providing a product in a sustainable way, in a way that is contributing to climate change and global warming reduction. Who's thinking about how to deliver a good product or a good service, but also protect the planet? Years ago, that would be difficult to find. Today, there are so many forward-leaning companies who are thinking about responsibility from an environmental standpoint that it just takes a little effort from us. So you can vote with your pocketbook, just like you can vote at the voting booth. And I think we should do more of that. And then I will say, once we put the right people in place to lead us, I love hearing from the public. Just yesterday, we proposed a clean cars rule recently, and about 7 children pulled a wagon up to EPA with boxes that symbolized the number of comments that they have about our rule. And I got a chance to talk to those moms and those children and the advocates. I believe that we all should be held accountable.
Amazing. Thank you so much for all your work, all your energy, all your excitement on all of these topics. And thank you for taking the time to speak to me and all of the listeners today.
Well, listen, I want to thank you for your leadership. You've been sounding the alarm for quite some time, but doing it in such an optimistic way, laying out and using your platform as a conduit for connecting on these issues. So thank you. We need to continue to have these conversations, and I look forward to more conversations.
Amazing. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you want to support this podcast, please visit sustainablepartnersinc.org/donate. Since we are a nonprofit, any little bit of funding helps us to bring you more episodes like this one. Today's episode would not have been possible without our amazing team. Producer and editor, Shelby Kaufman, and associate producer and engineer, Sophie Yu. I'm your host, Adam Mett, and thanks for listening to Planet Reimagined.